Yes, access granted to you, and especially you. Welcome to my 90th episode of Infotainment. I think that deserves some fanfare, don't you? Wahoo! Wahoo! It's been a long and winding road. Hi, my name is Randy, and I will be your host for this, my 90th episode of Infotainment. And I will be your round mound podcast sound, pound for pound, the best podcast around. This is a last stop podcast shop on your internet dial. Well, since I jazzed up the opening, let's stop, drop, and roll right into the program. First up on the podcast docket, we have an epic fail. It is too bad I couldn't show you the video on this, but it is hilarious. It shows two teenagers completely baffled by a rotary telephone when given 4 minutes to make one call. This is the moment two 17-year-olds are asked to use a traditional rotary telephone and are totally baffled. The American teenagers were given the challenge of dialing a phone number within 4 minutes. Belonging to a generation more acquainted with touchscreen mobile phones, the pair had difficulty understanding the concept of picking up the receiver. The pair began trying to push the holes on the rotary dial without any success. It takes them almost a minute to discover that you're supposed to rotate the dial using your finger all the way around to register an individual digit. After almost 1.5 minutes, an adult informs the pair that they have been doing it incorrectly, inputting the number 0, but have failed with every other digit. The teenagers pick up the receiver, but then promptly return it to the cradle before attempting to dial the number. The adult says, "You guys have made it all worth it. Everyone has struggles like you have." After more than 2.5 minutes, one of the teen asks, "Wait a minute, we are supposed to pick up the phone and then do it?" In the video posted by Kevin Bumstead. A woman suggests the pair put the handset to the ear and listen. Eventually, they are warned they have 1 minute left. Within 35 seconds remaining, one of the teenagers asks, "What's with all the holes, though?" One of the adults replies, "Such a great question." Eventually, just as it appears, teenagers might succeed in their task. The time runs out. Kevin Bumstead filmed the video, which features his nephew Kyle and son Jake. He said, "I saw a video similar on YouTube, and I thought it would be funny to see how my kids and their cousins handled this challenge at Christmas. So I decided them up by age groups, 24, 22, 19, and 19. These two, 17 and 17, and 14 and 12, and gave them the phone number and a 4 minutes to dial the phone. These two were the most entertaining, and they took the longest and sort of figured it out."
You failed, you big dummy.
You know, thinking about that last story, I wonder why that dad decided to do that experiment over Christmas. Maybe instead of giving them any decent Christmas presents, he decided to do this little prank trick or whatever on them. Cheap ass dad. Well, let's move on to something else. Technology is great, isn't it? When it works. I've had a couple problems this week. Got me really upset, mad, whatever. And the first one was having Windows update and then having to restart. And this has happened to me like 3 times. And I finally got a proper answer. But after restarting it, it kept getting stuck on the Dell logo. It wouldn't proceed any further. And finally, they came up with the answer. Well, restart, hold in the power button for a minute or whatever, and then unplug everything except your mouse and keyboard for a restart. So maybe that'll help in the future. And then the next problem happened today, which I had to deal with customer service again through my internet service provider, which is also my cable company. My internet was not functioning, and it was saying that my internet cable was not connected properly or a bad cable. Finding out after talking with customer service that I had to restart my computer. Well, we tried that as a thing. A lot of things that he suggested I had already tried. And finally, after a restart, after unplugging everything I got in this computer and then restarting it, finally brought my internet back. And then I had to do something yesterday dealing with customer service. And the first person I talked to seemingly could not do what I requested, and she wanted to pass me off to somebody else, and here I'm waiting on hold, listening to terrible music for about 30 minutes until she comes back and, oh, I'm sorry about the wait. Let me take care of it. And this is something she could have done in the first place instead of passing it on. Oh, I have to pass it on to an account specialist. I'm just shaking my head. Then you have to go through 500 menus to get the right one, and they still have to pass the buck after that. So it might be a while before this podcast gets posted. I don't know. It is January 12th, Saturday, and I was just woke up about a half hour ago. Unfortunately, I'm not a person who can just wake up and feel fresh as a daisy. It usually takes me like 15 minutes to knock the cobwebs out of my head. And more, it seems I'm waking up after totally bizarre dreams. Now, the one I woke up to this morning is a real head-scratcher. Now, I haven't thought about this actress or read anything about her or seen a movie by her in ages. And get your mind out of the gutter. but we were in bed, and here I'm lying next to Sigourney Weaver. I'm completely baffled as to why my dream would pick her. If anything, I have Kate Beckinsale on my Instagram and Jennifer Aniston on my Twitter. More likely would be one of those two, and we were just talking. It was just totally bizarre, and I still have a slight headache, and I'm going, just scratching my head, Sigourney Weaver. It'd be amazing, you know, if somebody has a dream and immediately the person you're dreaming about would have the same dream you're having. It's like, and they'd be going, who the hell is that? Although most dreams I forget within like a few minutes. You don't remember some of them. But this one I had a few weeks ago, I still remember because I remember I was recognizing colors. I had like a couple trees in my apartment, And all of a sudden, all these colorful finches flew out. And I'm going, what the hell? I need to have a dream analysis person on call or something, and they can interpret what these are about. I should buy one of those books explaining things about why you dream about what you do and stuff like that. Sometimes when I leave the TV on, I will have a dream about that program in some fashion, one of the actors or actresses or something like that. But I'm going, Sigourney Weaver, just to lie in bed and talk? Great. Maybe I should quit this topic before I put my foot in my mouth and do a TMI on it. But there are some dreams that stick with you for a long time, and others just you forget practically immediately. But it's unfortunate that so many of them are waking me up in the night. I have a slight headache and already reached for the generic version of Aleve. Hopefully the cobwebs will start clearing soon. I wish I could wake up and just feel like $1,000,000, but it usually takes me like 20 minutes to start clicking on all cylinders. But to anybody who understands why people dream what they do, you can email me at randyms12@gmail.com and tell me what that might be about. I would like an explanation about it. And there are some dreams that I would like to finish, but I wake up too much in advance. But that's enough about my sleep habits, I think. Well, I was going to talk about Sunday went to see the movie The Mule, starring Clint Eastwood. He is not definitely Dirty Harry anymore, but it wouldn't be a good role for him anymore, being he's coming up on the age of 90. And it was a good movie. He doesn't pull out a 44 caliber weapon, but gun. But he does have an interesting use for a tube of Bengay. When he's, I assume you figured out, and for those people who have seen it, he is trying to make money as a, well, he makes a lot of money as a mule for the Mexican drug cartel, and he does a really good job at it. And a lot of the time you see him singing in his vehicle driving along, and he does get threatened once, but no violence, no car explosions, or there's only one shot fired, and that was to kill the leader of the cartel so somebody else could take over. That was a little more hard line with him. And the ending was kind of stupid. I don't know why he... spoiler alert, if you do not want to hear this, the next line you might want to turn away. But he is in the courtroom and stands up to plead guilty. But he gets what he really likes to do in the prison, and that's kind of the end of it. It is kind of a sad movie. Might be his last. Well, I wish he'd do one last retired Dirty Harry thing where somebody gets let loose from a prison goes after him, so he has to come out of retirement, whatever, goes after him on his own. I don't know. I'm sure he would not do that. I would like to see a well-developed story around that, but the old fart can still teach some of the young cops some lessons. It would be great. I also did get a list of, I don't know, it was recommended to me. I don't know how they knew this, but it came up 15 facts about Clint Eastwood that you may not have known or know about. And one of them was, which is surprisingly enough, he is allergic to horses. It seems kind of funny. So that's why he was, he did a lot of them with horses. And I guess he tried to get out of that towards the end. And also, he was the man about town. Supposedly he has known about 8 children with 6 different women. And one of them is my age. And what were some of the other facts? Well, I knew this. He was mayor of Carmel by the Sea in California there for a year or two. And then they showed some of his properties, and he was his estimated worth was 300 and some million. With all those women and children, I wouldn't have figured it to be that high. Maybe that's an outmoded figure. But at the time, I don't know when this video was put up on YouTube, if it was this year or whatever, but at that time they said he was 87. And those are some interesting facts about Clint Eastwood. And if you like his style, you'll probably like, if you like Gran Torino, you'll like this movie. He doesn't die in this movie, but his ex-wife does. And spoiler alert, a little after the fact, but you might have seen it. I'd like to hear your impressions about it. And hopefully you'll be around to do another movie. Wait a minute, I do have a couple more interesting facts. And these are rather odd, being what he has acted in and stuff like that. I wouldn't think he would be considered for these roles, but at one time they wanted him to be James Bond. And he said no, because it should be an English actor for that. And also, he was offered the role of Superman, which eventually went to Christopher Reeves. And he stated that, turned that down because he wanted to stick with more reality-based characters. So I thought that was really unique. Clint Eastwood as James Bond. Can you imagine that? I would pick that role over being Superman. And it would have been an interesting thing to see him stretch his acting chops on playing James Bond. But go see The Mule. You won't be disappointed. There is also a scene with some women motorcyclists. That is pretty funny. And let's just say, well, he has a funny line when he finds out that their group is called Dykes on Bikes. It's pretty humorous. But that's my take on the movie The Mule with Clint Eastwood. I will add to that story that your motorcycle group in the movie The Mule, Dykes on Bikes, were not your rare form of, shall we say, lipstick lesbians. Now, after I post this episode to the internet, I plan on working on my stand-up comedy routine that I'm going to be posting on patreon.com/infotainment. I hope to record it in such a way that you feel like you're in a comedy club, and hopefully people will listen to it. But I could be recording it in the boxer briefs and just a t-shirt, but no one will ever know. But this one woman has taken it to that concept to new heights, shall we say. This stand-up comic says she fulfilled her dream of doing stand-up in her underwear. Why telling jokes with no pants is your biggest fear and my favorite gig. If anyone asks me about the most memorable set I have ever performed, I tell them about the first time I performed in my underwear at a sex club. When I got on stage at Oasis Aqua Lounge in Toronto, maybe I'll have to go there. I noticed that the audience was entirely dressed in towels, and that every other comic on the show had opted to stay fully clothed. As much as I was experiencing the tingling anxiety of pre-show jitters, I felt like I had to take the opportunity given to me that has not afforded it to many gigs. Upon undressing in the locker room, I congratulated myself in the mirror for wearing a more than impressive bra and underwear set. There I was in red patent leather Doc Martens, wearing only my undergarments, about to indulge in 15 minutes of stand-up, and I had never felt more excited to perform in my life. With a television screen next to me, I was kept well lit by the pornography playing, which also lended a blessing opportunity to describe all the ways that my junk doesn't look like that. I performed what I considered to be the funniest set of my career. To this day, I walked away from it feeling like I had swam 50 laps, my heart pounding and endorphins rushing around under my skin, and all I did was talk. I came, I saw, I conquered, and then after, a bunch of people came too. I can't imagine. Well, maybe I can't imagine this. For whatever reason, it had unlocked something within me that lended the opportunity to be exactly the kind of comic I want to be. Loud, physical, a little crass, and confident. Achieving such a balance is challenging. But it somehow all came together as my jeans and t-shirt got tossed in the locker. I'd call it my kink. But my feelings have little to do with sexual gratification and everything to do with artistic satisfaction. I took on two of humanity's biggest nightmares at once, public speaking and showing up to work and realizing you didn't put clothes on. Well, I've heard that for a long time about public speaking, how to overcome that fear. One of the ways is imagining your crowd totally nude, but that's that. But she definitely has a different take on it. Since then, I have accepted every opportunity to perform at a sex club and have always opted to perform in what I would call an outfit. A well-coordinated black bralette and cheekily printed panty, boots, and thigh-high socks. Yeah, I don't think I could rock that look at a comedy club. Yes, I have put together a formula for how to show up to these gigs. I've done comedy while bearing all, and I'll take the option to accessorize over it every time. As much as I love being naked in my apartment on a lazy afternoon after a shower, I appreciate being able to put together a not quite naked look for the occasion of being in front of people. Unlike other performing arts, like burlesque or pole dancing, there is an element of having to be sexy that's missing when it comes to stand-up. You are bringing aspects of yourself that aren't sexy to the surface. And I really think good stand-up makes a person's appearance sort of disappear. I spoke to one of the only people I know who's ever done burlesque and stand-up, and her perspective doesn't vastly differ from mine. Daisy Badcock. Badcock. Is a Toronto-based actor and burlesque performer. The times I've seen her perform, she's made creative choices and injects an upbeat energy into her face and body movements. Her song picks are more campy than they are sensual, and she's not afraid to make a mess. The last chance I had to see her live was at a Christmas-themed variety show where she danced to a mix of All I Want for Christmas Is You. Unlike the Friends episode where Chandler Bing's dad performed It's Raining Men at his Vegas show, Viva Las Vegas. Let's see. Turn Down for What and Get Low is another that she danced to, which ended with her nearly completely nude and pouring eggnog all over her pasty-laden boobs. Eggnog. I don't know if she had any peppermint schnapps with that or not, but Daisy Badcock is someone I describe as a funny burlesque performer. She auditions predominantly for humorous roles, and she gave stand-up comedy a fair shake by trying it a couple times. I wanted to know, would the idea of doubling down on revealing herself seem like a thrill or a nightmare? You know, if I did this, it'd be everyone's worst nightmare. And when I've done stand-up, I feel in my most raw and vulnerable. I'm emotionally naked. You also have some things to hide behind when it's burlesque. I've got my costume, I've got my music, glitter, fringe, and my boobs. I'm hiding behind my boobs. I then asked her how the idea of performing stand-up partly nude would make her feel. She said she'd probably feel more comfortable, and I immediately lit up. I feel a nude body is just as much a part of you as your face or your hand. Nudity adds to the entertainment. A lot of the time when you're doing burlesque, the audience is full of other burlesque dancers and sex-positive people. There's probably people in the room who are thinking pervy thoughts, but I don't let that bother me. No, nobody's thinking about sex when you're performing burlesque. Come on. If I'm entertaining, then I'm doing my job. For anyone who might be uncomfortable with the idea of someone being in their underwear in front of strangers, I'm going to point out to you that it's not super different from going to the beach. Unless you keep your khakis on when you suntan, seeing a little ass cheek and breastplate shouldn't be a particularly shocking display. Human beings have assigned a bizarre value to bras versus bathing suits. Yeah, that is kind of a, you know, it's basically you're wearing bra and panties when you're wearing a two-piece bathing suit, ladies. Isn't that the case? Even though they show the same amount of skin, even Miss America pageant contestants, the most wholesome of the whole, are expected to prance across a stage bikini-clad in front of an audience of millions, because somehow that's the best way to award scholarships to young women. And yet somehow, the second it's lace instead of that weird polyester, it's considered too taboo to be seen, even when you're enthusiastically choosing to. The sex club show vibe has always been people enthusiastically watching while patiently waiting for it to be over so they can go off and on their sexual exploits. I typically wind up charmed by the polite nature of the audience and their willingness to enjoy an art form that has a terribly unsexual nature. People who pay to have fun in this place are willing to take some time off, getting off, and get some laughs in. They don't heckle, they don't come in and out, no pun intended, and they aren't noticeably drunk. They trust the show and give the acts the control of the room. Can cure folks might say, they submit. I might have been lucky to have obedient audiences every time. It would be my raw talent and unadulterated stage presence, or maybe it's the whip who can truly say for sure. But it was likely the strict consent, behavior, harassment rules put in place to keep everyone, women, safe. Frankly, you have as much of a chance of being creeped out by an audience member at any fully clothed comedy venue than you do under these circumstances, but it ultimately depends on where you go. I didn't know that doing stand-up in my underwear was a dream come true until I did it. Nothing could possibly beat that set, not because nothing will be better than it, but because it was a learning moment in becoming the kind of comic I want to be. I got to wear something completely unconventional and somehow entirely appropriate. I got to be as explicit as I chose to be because, hey, we're all a little naked. I also got to show the audience that I was willing to be as vulnerable as they are in a very personal way. That everything we're doing is unconventional and so right. I'm not here to remind them of society's rules of convention. I'm here to give them as much of an unforgettable experience as I've had. I guess she intends to, well, she's already tried to kick it up a notch and promote herself for a Netflix comedy special wearing crotchless panties. Probably, you'll never know what I'm going to be dressed in when I do my comedy special. Maybe I'll put on my red rubber clown nose that I bought for charity a while back that they were selling for $1. I forget what it was for. Can you imagine that? I don't know what she dresses in the States. If she does the comedy clubs, it'd be interesting to know. And or if she shows pictures of her outfit from these clubs. Well, good for her. If it makes her a better comic. Now, if you remember the comedian Chris Farley, the performer from Saturday Night Live, comedian, may he rest in peace. He was asked to do one of the most memorable skits from Saturday Night Live ever, is where he was competing against Patrick Swayze for a spot on the Chippendale Dancer squad. And I guess he was nervous about it. And I guess he was friends with Tom Arnold and called him and asked that they wanted to have him take his shirt off. Tom Arnold said, if you do this, you do it like you own it. And boy, did he own it. And it was one of the funniest skits they ever did. And not unlike myself, unfortunately, neither of us got the Brad Pitt gene. So if you're going to dress like that and do stand-up comedy, you got to own it. Now I think it's time to call Red Alert and warp drive this to the interwebs. I would like to thank you, and especially you, for listening to the program today. And you can contact me by email, randyms12@gmail.com. You can tweet my Twitters at randypodcaster. And check out my Facebook page. I hope everyone has a pleasant evening and a happy ending tomorrow. Or however that goes. Bye-bye, folks.